Well, welcome everybody. My name is Patty Bergen. I am the founder and head coach, I guess, at Seattle Coach. And it's occurred to us that it would be a good idea to host a little bit of an intro seminar to those of you that have heard about coaching and might be interested in it. So look at this photo and make a mental note about what is going on between these two, what's going on between these two men. You may know that's Pete Carroll, head coach of the Seattle Seahawks, with one of his players, and you could almost see the electricity passing between both of their eyes. And if you're like most leaders, you just made up a story. What is going on here? I don't know. I just love the photo. Is it teaching? Is he telling or challenging or nagging or rescuing or propping up or comforting or encouraging or something else? Well, in the coming 60 minutes, our hope is to talk about how maybe coaching is a little different than all of those other things. So about 20, 25 years ago, I was a pastoral counselor and then I became a licensed marriage and family therapist. And I began to notice about 20 years ago that my favorite coachees, my favorite clients would work with me for a while, maybe as a therapist. And then they would say to me, well, I don't have a diagnosis and my relationship is fine. And just when I thought they were going to say, so I think we're done, I think I can stop coming here, they would lean in, they would look me in the eye, and they would say, and this happened multiple times, they would say, I don't want to stop coming here. And I would look at them and I would say, the first few times this happened, what would we work on? And each of them would say something like, we would work on my contribution and my satisfaction and my sense of purpose. And the first few times this happened, I said, well, you can't charge insurance for that. And they would smile back and they would say, that's all right. I don't want to stop coming here. And this was right when coaching was becoming professionally defined, both as entrepreneurial coaching and as internal leadership coaching. So just to make sure I understood the difference, I went through coach training myself. And over time, people would say to me, now, what do you do? And instead of saying I'm a therapist, I would say I'm a coach. And they would say, cool, what sport? They don't say that anymore. Because coaching has become sort of what I think of as an essential gear for so many leaders, especially those of you that are on the inside of great systems. So over the next several years, I coached, and then I had another wave of my favorite clients, and they would say to me, hey, Patty, how do I learn to do what you do? And I didn't have an answer for them until about 2008. And then I said, I could teach you. So we call ourselves the small craft brewery of coach training programs because we began with great ingredients, great people, and pretty good content, and we put them together. And then we leverage the relationships of each of our small cohorts so that the members of each cohort become lifelong allies, maybe even lifelong friends. And what I know about coaching leadership is you do best if you've got somebody in your corner, if you know you belong and you don't get isolated. Now, some of our very first adopters back in 2008 were from high tech. And then within about 5 years, doctors began to appear. So on this call is Rumina Bala, who showed up. She's got one of my all-time favorite signatures. She is a physician and a filmmaker and now coach. So Rue showed up and so did Alejandra Chaparro. And Then Bob Salwin showed up. And Bob was from the UW, and he changed the world a little bit in terms of coaching leadership at the UW. We began to do some work at Seattle Children's. And then Carlos Pellegrini appeared. And about last year at this time, Carlos did an interview with the Journal of General Surgery. And for some reason, Carlos mentioned coaching and Seattle Coach specifically. And as a result of that, more doctors started showing up. And I started becoming very interested in supporting you guys that are leaders in healthcare. So that's a little bit about me. And we're going to hear from a few of our doctors in a moment. But here's what I imagine for the next 40 minutes, 50 minutes. We're going to talk about how we got here. We're going to do some interviews. I'm going to present some coachy content, some stuff that I think of as foundational to how coaching works in the life of a leader that wants to become a better boss or a better and more inspirational leader. Then we're going to go into breakout sessions for just about 10 minutes with some of our physician and doctor coaches. And the question that we will put to all of you is the question of, why did you put yourself in the room? Why did you put yourself on this call? And we're going to listen for trends, because that's what coaches do. We listen for trends. We listen for themes. We listen beyond the words. Then at the end, we'll talk about some ideas that we've got for 2022. But first, I'd like you to meet three of my all-time favorites. We've got Doug Wood, who is, as many of you know, a surgeon at the University of Washington. Doug, I just read today that you were on the list of Seattle Magazine top docs. Don't know when you were going to tell us that, but congratulations on that. So that's Doug. We've got Christine Lombardosi, who found us, I think, because of Carlos's interview and then the subsequent call we did with doctors who expressed interest. Christine is a trauma surgeon in South Carolina, Spartanburg, South Carolina. And then, of course, we've got Carlos Pellegrini, who I always think about Carlos's story, that he got to the place where he didn't want to do surgery anymore, but he's a very clever man and he didn't want to get bored. So he thought, well, I'll look at this coaching thing. And I will let you tell the rest of the story in a moment, Carlos. So let me just pitch a few questions to you guys. So Doug, you first. Would you talk to us a little bit about how coaching has changed your leadership? You talk about how it's given you leverage and humility and vision. Would you talk to us about how that works?
Yeah, thank you, Patty. And I'm excited to be a part of this group. Very briefly, in terms of background of coaching, I got coaching for a faculty member who was struggling. It was remediation coaching. And it made a huge difference for that person. And that was my enlightenment of, I wonder if I could get some of that improvement for myself, that I saw one of my faculty member really turn it around and be so different. And certainly I benefited from coaching. And then in watching and listening to Carlos's interview last year that Patty was talking about, the thing that stuck with me, because Carlos was the chair of surgery before me, and the question to him was, do you have any regrets, anything that you would do differently? And Carlos said, I would have trained as a coach earlier. And I thought, I could learn from Carlos's experience in that regard. And that's when I got in touch with Patty and decided to do coach training. And I think what I have benefited from is first enlightenment about myself and bringing a better version of myself to the faculty that I work with, the staff that I work with, the leadership decisions that I that are put in front of me, as well as people above me, you know, the people that I report to. I think I bring a better version of myself there. And the second point you asked me about, Patty, is with coaching training, I think a key point that I've learned is I've learned a humility of not having all of the answers. In fact, having very few answers, particularly for other people. And therefore, an approach in my discussions with people of instead of advising them, but approaching them from a coaching perspective of trying to ask insightful questions that help them leverage what's going to be best for them, rather than me leaping to a view that I have an answer for them once I've heard the issue or problem. That's not been easy for me because I think I have a lot of smart ideas. And so that requires some discipline on my part, but I think that is an aspect that I would take from coaching that has changed how I've approached my daily interactions and the people that I work with for the better. And I hope that it helps me be a more productive leader for the group of people that I get to work with every day.
How does it help, you know, the people that work most closely with you when you, as you've challenged that belief that is so true of people in healthcare? I know the answer. Maybe you don't, but I know, and there's a lot at stake.
Well, in my head, still all the time, I have something to really smart to say. And so the difference is restraint. And humility is the right word. I think I have learned that I might have this idea, but it might not be the best thing for the person that I'm talking with. And so really trying to approach issues or questions or problems with curiosity rather than answers. It doesn't always get to a clear solution, but it also requires patience on my part, and I'm not that patient a person. And so that's been a lesson learned as well, to slow down and be willing to let a dialogue play out that can help a person find their own path rather than me telling them the path that I think is best for them.
Christine, this reminds me of something I've heard you say, you know, that for a long time, you know, and I suppose as a trauma surgeon, I understand that you had this, how did you say it? You had this habit of I speak and they listen. And so I guess it's similar to what Doug's saying. Could you talk a little bit about that? And then I want to stack my question here. Talk a little bit about that. And then what's the payoff when you tap the brakes on I speak and you listen?
I think all of us understand that there are times inside our clinical experience where it still works that way. I say, and we do. But I think that we are not crowdsourcing very well, that the people around us are pretty intelligent, hardworking individuals. And I think I see coaching as empowerment. And we get the most out of people when we empower them to think and speak and generate ideas. And I think I just see so much more wealth of ideas and at all levels when you leverage the fact that you can empower the individuals around you.
Mm-hmm.
I think, tell me the second part again. I lost that.
Yeah, just what's the feedback loop? I mean, what makes you want to keep doing that?
I love the image of shining the light away from me and onto the individual. And I've seen it work on every level, that everyone around us has something to contribute, that they want to impact their environment, and we can create such a better product when we empower everyone around us. It's pretty amazing what you can create when you let the people around you be who they're going to be.
Gee. You know, I've been thinking about the mental health needs of our culture these days, and what you guys are talking about just speaks to that. You know, to being able to respect people, to listen to them, to know that you've heard the phrase, people join great organizations and leave bad leaders. So when leaders learn to listen a little more carefully, I think we address mental health needs and cultures get better. Thanks, Christine. Okay, so over to you, Carlos. Could you briefly tell us your story of how you found coaching and what you're doing now?
I waited for a long time because I waited until I was ready to retire to get into coaching. But mine was a little bit serendipitous. You know, Bob Sawin and I have shared a lot of interest in human relationships. And we were talking about that in the office when he told me that he was a student at Seattle Coach. And that got me inspired to say, I would like to learn more. I never intended to become a professional coach as I am now, but I decided to try. And it was practicing coaching during our sessions that got me more and more interested in that. And Doug said something that stuck with me when he said that I had said that I would have taken coaching earlier. And so why I said that is for all the reasons that Doug and Christine were talking about. First, I remember vividly a sign that I saw in your office the first time I walked into there behind you that I could not understand. The sign was very simple. It said, be curious. I wonder if you still have it on the wall. But I said, what does that mean? Be curious. You know, it seems... And I learned through coaching that you become curious when you are humble and when you realize you don't have all the answers. And when you start asking the other person questions, and it's the way you relate to the other individual in terms of asking questions that leads the other person to find her own truth or his own truth. And it's such a powerful way to do it. Doug talked about restraint. I think that I like to call it intentional listening, but I realize that it is so incredibly powerful for me now. I wish I would have had that 10 years ago, to be able to just look at somebody's eyes and say, tell me more. Tell me the story. And you realize that there's so much on the other person, and restraint continuously for me to tell them this is the solution, which is our normal pattern when you are a physician. Yeah. This is what you want to know. This is the solution.
Okay, so briefly, this is to all three of you. How do you see the difference between a mentor and a coach?
Since I have the mic, I'll tell you my brief mention is, I think a mentor is somebody who takes care of a person in a more paternal way, helps that person nourishes that person, connects that person to others, opens doors for that person, suggests the name of that person to somebody else to let them talk or something of that nature. A coach is a completely different situation. A coach is not necessarily a friend, is not a teacher. It's somebody who has to get into the mind of the coachee to find out first, what is it that motivates the coachee? Where is the coachee going? And try to understand that coachee, and through the process of understanding, ask more questions about what is important. Fantastic. And what are you going to do?
Okay. Well, I think I want to bring Trish in here for just a minute. From the University of Washington, Trish Critic. We didn't think we'd have her here in our first few minutes. But I know you are giving some major leadership emphasis to coaching at the UW and UW Medicine. Is there anything that's kind of gotten inspired in you as you've listened to Doug and Christine and Carlos?
Thanks, Patty. For folks that I don't know, I'm a pulmonary and critical care doc and the associate dean for faculty affairs at UW in the School of Medicine, and I'm not a coach. Several people here have had conversations with me as I think about a bunch of strategies, learning from what we've done at Seattle Children's, what we're doing in other programs, and individual faculty who've become coaches or had coaches that I'd like to, I'm developing a plan to bring coaching to our faculty. And I think Doug was part of a brainstorming about that recently, about how we can do this kind of growth mindset focused coaching. I think my vision is focusing on mid-career folks to do some of what Carlos was just talking about, which is helping our faculty think about what is that next phase? What's that next step? Yeah, yeah. How do they grow in that? I think what's been interesting to me as I listen, and this is something you and I have talked about, Patty, is I think the concept of bringing the coaching mindset to our leaders is uniquely attractive, because I do think that sometimes the skills that we reward that end up resulting in people ending up in leadership positions across our system are not necessarily naturally the coaching skills that I just heard the three folks echo being so essential to what they do. So my biggest reflection is that.
That's great. Love that.
It inspires me to think about bringing coaching to our leaders. And I love Doug as a partner.
He's a good one. Can you all see my screen? Can you see the pictures of Doug and Christine and Carlos? Yes. Okay, good. Okay.
Beautiful pictures.
I know, especially that handsome guy on the right there. Okay, so I want to talk about what I call the coaching leaders arena. This is a way of thinking about coaching as opposed to, you know, directing or inspiring or teaching or mentoring. So here's the first axis. I will make sure that you get this graphic later. You, the coaching leader, get to be the main creator or doer. We love that because our brains light up. This happens when somebody comes to us for advice, and boy, do we have the answer. You engage with, you engage with your subject matter expertise, your experience, and boy, that Southwest quadrant is just such a fun place to be because our brains are just lighting up. The other end of the north end of the north-south quadrant, you engage instead with your curiosity and your questions, your listening. Maybe you listen beyond the words. And for sure, your expertise and your experience inform your questions. We have people at Microsoft that use the word quidgestion, kind of a question or a suggestion cleverly disguised as a question. When you're in the north end of this little scheme, you are engaging with your curiosity, with your questions, with your listening. I was talking to a mid-career guy the other day, whom I just enjoy so much. He's an executive counsel for a big organization, and he wants to be able to contribute more than just, you know, his legal expertise. And he said, you know, the last 5 years, I have just gotten restless. He says, I know I'm the best lawyer in town, but I've gotten restless. And he leaned in and his voice got gentle when he said that. I said, what happened 5 years ago? And he said, my daughter was born deaf. The light of my life can't hear. And he said, these past 5 years, it's like my whole soul has gotten a little softer and more receptive to what life has for me in these few decades we have on the pebble. That was my job in that moment, to listen beyond the words. So here's the other part. Your coachee gets to be the main creator or doer. You challenge, you support. And I don't ever mean to suggest that we as coaching leaders aren't direct. We sure are. But boy, when your coachee gets to be the main doer or creator and you challenge, you support, you respond to what they offer you, their brain lights up. And that's pretty fun too. So here's how I see the quadrants. Obviously, it's a dotted line between them because, you know, a leader is going to operate all over the coaching leader's arena all day long. I know there are times that you advise, you give direction. Me too. I know there are times that you teach and inspire. I know there are times that you mentor and introduce. So what we're talking about is helping leaders, both entrepreneurs like Carlos and internal coaching leaders, to be able to operate better up in that Northeast quadrant where you're connected, you're co-creating. I can tell when I'm in the Northeast quadrant, if the person I'm talking to says, I could, here's what I think I could do. Here's what I think I can do from them, than they hear, here's what I think you should do from me. So I'm listening for the I could. Now, around the whole thing is what we call coaching presence. Coaching presence is a whole bunch of my favorite C words. It's calm, compassionate, curious, creative. A good coaching leader is going to bring coaching presence even to those moments where she's giving advice and telling, giving direction. That calm, clear, compassionate, curious, courageous presence. And then here's the last bit. There's also what I think of as the culture within which you get to work. There's your presence, but there's also the culture, Trish is talking about. Trish and several others of you at Seattle Children's and UW Medicine, you are on a mission to create a learning culture, what Satya Nadella over at Microsoft calls a learn-it-all culture, not just a know-it-all culture. I don't know how to build coaching leaders if they're not a part of a culture that really wants to become a coaching culture. So that gold line, I know it looks different for some of your organizations than maybe it does at Microsoft, or maybe what it looks like, I don't know, at Amazon or with Seattle Coach. But I know that you can't just focus on that Northeast quadrant without your learning coaching presence and having the support of a coaching culture. Here's an example. Your talented new resident is facing a big challenge, and she says, how would you approach this? And maybe like Doug and Christine were saying, maybe you tap the brakes a moment. You know, you don't go to the default. When she says, how would you approach this? The default is fun because your brain lights up and you are not without opinion about how to answer that question. But you tap the brakes. You know she has a deep sense of purpose. You know she wants to grow in her craft. You know she's up to the challenge. Very smart person. So maybe you inspire, you tell, or you mentor her, because everybody on this call is good at that. But in coaching education, we would talk about what even a small shift to that northeast corner would look like. How would you approach this? You know she has a deep sense of purpose. You know she wants to grow in her craft. You know she's up for the challenge. We will give you a couple more examples of what it would look like to do just even what we call a 10% shift up into this corner, the northeast corner. But first, I'm going to go into breakouts for just about 10 minutes. We've got 7 of our physician coaches who are going to mostly listen. Julie Stringham is on our faculty at Seattle Coach, and she's going to randomly put everybody into breakouts. And, Julie, it's okay if you want to have fewer breakouts with more people.
Okay, I could. Right now we have about 3 people in each room, a couple with 4, but I could move.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Okay.
Okay, so I have about 25 till. We're going to stay in our breakouts until quarter till. And then I will call on our 7, what we call triad coaches, our facilitator breakout coaches. And I'm going to ask them to talk to all of us about the trends and themes that they have heard. Okay, so Julie,
when I'm going to open the rooms, and then we'll give you a 2-minute, we'll broadcast a message when you have about 2 minutes left, and then you'll have, when we close the rooms, you'll have a minute to wrap up. So I'm going to open the rooms and you'll have to join your rooms.
Great, thank you. That's so cool.
There we go. I have a timer going. I just learned something new. The people who joined after I created the rooms, I just had to manually add them. So
what happens to our recording? Does that get paused?
I don't know, but I can pause it right now.
Might as well.
Okay.
Okay.
They have about 35 seconds to come back.
Very good.
Sorry about that, you guys. Jim and Karen, I'm sorry. I ended up exiting a little early by punching the wrong button.
No worries.
Hey, Carrie, I did the same thing. Sorry, okay. Dustin. Jack.
Call that, you know, when you're talking on the phone and you think goodbye, but you don't say it, and then you hang up. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Press the button. Like
okay, here they come. So I have on the list some of our co-hosting coaches, some of whom just facilitated a breakout. And in addition, we have some non-physician coaches who have great affection for healthcare, and they have been noticing with me, they've been on the lookout for themes and trends. So Sean and Rue and Carrie and Christine and Carlos and Bob and Sherilyn and Doug, talk to us about your hunches. You know, we don't need you to necessarily say who said what, or certainly not if there's any confidences shared, but what themes did you pick up?
Well, I'll give a couple of themes. One theme was Carlos told me to do it.
So
enough of this group knows Carlos to know that has a lot of meaning and carries a lot of weight.
Yes.
But that aside, there was a theme of, as a leader, working with other leaders, a coaching mindset is better, going to be more effective than a mentoring mindset because of the relationships. And the other view of identifying the benefits of coaching, having experienced it in remediation, and wanting to be proactive in another phase of one's career of helping others never get to remediation and just help them in development be a better version of where they're trying to go. So those would be themes that my group came up with.
You have influenced me. I know that you see value in occasional remediation coaching. And for a while that became sort of what coaching was heavily associated with. So for you now to say, yeah, let's keep that and let's add to it the kind of coaching that keeps people from ever needing remediation. You've influenced me.
One theme that came up in our discussion in our room that struck me because I hadn't heard it before is, if you adopt all the coaching culture that we were talking about, and you are still a physician and you are in a group of type A people.
Yeah.
And you sort of go on with your coaching attitude, humility and listening, and I don't have all the answers and so forth. Are you not perceived as a weak person because of that? My sense is that is not the case, but I don't have all the answers.
What's your answer? If you've spent a few decades as sort of a type A physician if you have done that and then all of a sudden you are expressing more humility and respect and inviting a larger conversation, how do you talk about that?
Well, that was a question that, came up on the leader. I realized during my latter part of being a CMO at the university that when I started learning a lot about coaching and I started practicing coaching, that if I was listening to somebody, I was always trying to find out, even if I disagreed from the beginning of what was being said, and my old Carlos would say, jump on and tell them what to do, I would say, there's got to be some truth in what this person is saying. Listen, 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 listen actively. And then start by recognizing what we have in common. What was the truth?
Uh-huh.
And then add and, not necessarily but and, I think X, Y, Z. And I think you can do that with humility, but with strength and with confidence. And you can demonstrate that confidence. And my sense is that people respected that more than the person who is edging to respond to a stimulus without having that pause that is so important there.
Our friend John Medina, who is my colleague working with me occasionally, is he's a neuroscientist at the UW, and he talks about what you just described as the shift response, which has been studied. That's that thing that's so annoying when you have shared something very poignant and then somebody, whoever's listening to you, puts the spotlight then back over their head. And what you're talking about, Carlos, is I suppose a challenge to the shift response, which I think probably is pretty common in healthcare.
Patty, we talked about, we all agreed that there's a crescendo of interest in coaching in healthcare, and for lots of different reasons. And one of the things we talked about is how do we scale it up? You know, how do we make it available to more people? And there seemed to be a lot of interest in your model of applying coaching concepts to leadership training so that leaders become more effective in that way. It's almost as though there's different products that we're talking about here. You know, there's the one-on-one coaching, but there's the only way we're going to maybe make the big impact at an institution like the university is to figure out a way to scale it up.
Yeah.
And we also had some discussion about how do you, for the uninitiated, those who don't fully understand what coaching is all about, how do you get them interested and how do you make them understand the potential return on that investment?
Mm-hmm. Excellent. We have time for two more comments from you guys who are facilitator coaches.
Patty, we had a very similar theme come up in ours, the idea that coaching could be for the masses and not just the upper echelons of leadership, and also the idea of culture shift and what that would take. And exactly as you say, different products, there's the idea of one-to-one coaching from which everyone may benefit, especially in the international context right now. But also that idea of coaching and leadership as well. So that echoed very strongly what was just said.
Nice. Thank you, Rue.
And then I apologize for speaking up again, but one other thing that was brought up that is a great personal interest for me too, is the role of coaching in addressing what has become a big epidemic in healthcare, and that is burnout. And, you know, what's the best way to maximize or leverage the coaching concepts to minimize or treat burnout?
Yeah, it's huge. Carrie, could I put you on the spot for a minute? We've got a veterinarian physician on the call, and you may have read about how burnout is epidemic among vets. There are 50 million more pets in the world now than there was 2 years ago. Could you comment on that, Carrie?
Yeah. So in COVID, we added 50 million on top of 150 million. We already had 150 million pets, and we added 50 million, and we only added 3,000 providers. So every veterinarian had their panel double in the last year. In an already stressed profession. The coaching style of leadership has been dramatic for me in terms of establishing kind of a different way of creating alliance with my clients and my colleagues and my superiors that provides a connection that I crave, but it also has really helped establish where I end and what I can let go of and not have to be the know all the answers about. And it's been shocking to discover how much wisdom is present around me when I thought I knew it all.
Thank you. So the burnout question, I think, is going to be intergenerational. You know, some of us are elders, some of us are, you know, in the middle, and then we've got this whole crop of healthcare providers that are coming up that I think we can if what we do now in 2021, 2022 works, then maybe 20 years from now, there'll be less burnout, far less burnout. Okay, so I'm going to follow up this call with, I'll post the recording. I will post my little Coaching Leaders Arena. And I've got four questions for you guys, especially those of you who think, well, shoot, maybe I would like to learn more about being an internal coaching leader. There are four questions I have. We train people in small heterogeneous cohorts. We train people, for example, we've done five rounds at Microsoft. We've got 40 people together in the same culture going through a very highly customized coach training program for people with a lot of commonality. So those are my questions for you. If you were going to train, would you want a cohort of other physicians and healthcare providers? Would you want a heterogeneous group? Would you want to do what Carlos and Bob and Doug and Christine and Carrie and several others on this call, would you like to do what they did in meeting every week for most of 8 months? Or would you, or would it be more amenable to your schedule to meet quarterly? So we're playing with all of these pieces. And again, I'm going to send the link to this page to everybody who's been on this call. And I would very much look forward to your feedback. We've got 1 minute left. I want to thank everybody who helped to co-host the call today. And all of our coaches know this quote: to journey without being changed is to be a nomad. To change without journeying is to be a chameleon. To journey and be transformed by the journey is to be a pilgrim. So our motto, our closing toast at Seattle Coach, you'll recognize a few people in this photo, is that we all hold a real or pretend beverage. And we count down from three, two, one. And then together, we muster up our very best Scottish accent. It's also okay if you sound like a pirate. And we say together, to the journey then, like that. But that's the journey that we're thinking about. To journey and be changed by it is to be a pilgrim. Thank you for joining us. Let's see, I think we get Carlos to count us down from three.
All right. Three, two, one. To the journey.
To the journey.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.